Major funding for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities. From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Sculpture and the containment of nuclear waste, this week on Soundings. My guest is a recent visitor at the National Humanities Center, sculptor James L. Acord of Seattle, Washington. James Acord aims to practice his art and to serve humankind by depositing nuclear waste within a series of sculptures that function as artistic repositories, stretching across the Aleutian Islands and through Siberia, eventually extending around the world. Here is James Acord.
For me, I was led to using nuclear materials through a very traditional pursuit of sculpture. I started out just like any other sculptor, I suppose, studying the materials and the techniques necessary to express myself in that three-dimensional art form. In the course of my own studies, it led me to work with radioactive materials. The use of radioactive materials in art is appropriate both from a traditional point of view of sculpture and is singularly appropriate to today's nuclear age.
Jim, what kind of stuff do you want to put where? We have the handicap here of being on the radio. We can't say, let's lean down very close and we'll see what you're talking about. Be very concrete for me.
Well, to look at the very pinnacle or apex of my dream, like any sculptor, I have a lot of ideas in mind. But the thing I would most like to do to round out this last period of work of mine would be to create works of art out of permanent and durable materials that would, in fact, safely contain plutonium, a man-made element, which, to the best of my knowledge, has never been used for art before. Secondly, as a way of increasing my vocabulary in sculpture, the actual three-dimensional vocabulary of mass and void, I was looking to use more than one material together to create single unified sculptures. Looking for materials that were compatible as well as durable led me to an understanding that certain materials, dissimilar or different though they may be in their form, are actually related in a way in which they can best be thought of as different concentrations of the same elemental substance. Now, I know this sounds a little bit unscientific, but it makes sense to me to think of metal as being a concentration of stone. Mm-hmm. Most of the metals we use are, in fact, extracted from stone, and through processes of separation and extraction are created into a pure metal alloy.
Well, here we come to this connection between granite and uranium and
yes,
nuclear fission and all.
That's right. Well, I chose granite not only for its lovely aesthetic capabilities and qualities, but because of its durability in today's polluted outdoor environment. I was already thinking that the metals that I would use with this granite for outdoor sculpture would be corrosion-resistant alloys, stainless steels, titaniums, things of that nature. Although at that time I hadn't as of yet made the connection between titanium and zirconium and the nuclear industry, what I was hoping to do was use the metal that was most characteristic of the granite itself, knowing that probably traces of a number of metals would be found in any magmatic rock. I researched what were the most characteristic metals of the granite that I was working with. To my considerable surprise, I learned it was uranium. In fact, there was an article published here a few years ago surveying the world's granite supplies with an eye toward extracting, mining that granite to extract the uranium from it if we ran short of uranium. Well, this posed a number of dilemmas for me. Uranium was not the kind of metal I was looking for to use with the granite, simply because it's so reactive, as well as being toxic. I did, however, feel that I would stay with my original idea and use uranium in the sculpture simply because it was characteristic of the granite. This then brought me back to realizing that in order to use that uranium, it would have to be contained within suitable, strong, durable, and corrosion-resistant metal alloys so that the sculptures would be safe at the time of their creation and remain safe for as long as the uranium remained in them.
Is this brand new to you? Are we going to use a dangerous word like unique? Did you dream this up? What was your inspiration?
Well, my inspiration were a million small hesitant steps, each one dictated by where I'd just been before. Not unlike most artists, I suppose, I've been led to where I am by making small individual decisions, and it's easy to look back on it and say that if it hadn't been for one or another step along the way, I might have ended up a completely different place. In fact, it's been a pursuit of material usage and an understanding of those materials through a control of the technology, the skills necessary to use them, that led me to work with the most radioactive of all the traditional sculpture materials, and that is granite.
In what way does your work connect with medieval art? I remember listening to you at a luncheon seminar here at the Humanities Center and thinking, this is going to be an interesting leap. Will you bridge that gap for me?
Well, there's both personal bridging as well as the fact that sculpture has been involved in religious art probably for almost all of the course of civilization. As you probably noticed in that luncheon lecture, I was in fact employed full-time carving stone statues, primarily of a religious nature. Most religious art, even that which is produced for the churches and cemeteries of today, are based very tightly on some of the conceptual and design elements that were developed during the Middle Ages, from the Renaissance. So I was very much living a medieval period in my commercial stone carving 40 hours a week while I was working on the sculptures that I'm finishing now. But more than that, actually, I think that period in art has always been a very important one to me because I imagine it as being a time in which sculpture, speaking perhaps to a largely illiterate population, sculpture was used to communicate very important and meaningful things to the people of that time. Without saying that maybe sculpture was more important to civilization at that time, I'd just say that it was more a part of the overall everyday fabric of people's lives.
What about medieval art as a sort of repository, the whole idea of the sacred, the iconographic, do I have that right?
Sure.
Help me to understand that.
Well, as I understand it, I mean, in a broader sense, sculpture is in fact always a repository for the ideas of civilization. All works of art, in fact, are part of our cultural heritage. And in fact, with the creation of every work of art, we contribute to that great reservoir. But particularly in medieval art, Christian medieval art, sculpture was used specifically as a container for valued and perhaps fragile religious artifacts. Sometimes the containers themselves were hidden in that it was not known to the casual viewer or observer that there was an object of religious significance contained within it. Other times, in fact, the sculpture purposefully displayed the religious artifact. Overall, I think the sculpture played an important part in the preservation as well as the identification of the artifact that was in it.
And here we have an echo of your comment about medieval art, something that is not only sacred, but something that endures, but in a fashion that medieval artists certainly never would have thought of, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I can imagine in my mind's eye my forgotten colleagues in the Middle Ages vested with the responsibility of creating a reliquary to hold some object of religious veneration. And I can imagine my colleagues bringing not only their best skill and their devotion to their art and perhaps their God as well to the work, but also bringing their understanding of materials in a way that would encourage the sculptures to survive and contain successfully and preserve these relics for a very long period of time.
Help me to understand what you're doing, Jim Acord, with respect to this strange and wonderful connection between sculpture and nuclear waste. You talk about
art on the one hand, there is an immense political implication on the other hand. Before our taping session, I heard you say that you're uncomfortable mixing art and politics. Is that a little naive of you to say that? I mean, haven't they always been mixed up?
Well, I suppose in a way that they have, and I didn't begin to respond to it until people began addressing me as a political artist, and the fact that people began thinking that politics was perhaps the driving mechanism behind the art that I'm doing. I'd like to say first that politics and art, although in the near field phenomena seem to be closely related, actually I think they have very little to do with themselves at all. As an example, I'll say that Pablo Casals didn't play the cello any better or worse because of his long self-imposed exile from fascist Spain, nor is Picasso's painting any better or worse for his defense of some of Stalin's pogroms after World War II. In the end, the art is the art. An artist is, of course, influenced, as we all are, by the societal implications of things that are going around. I would be more inclined to say if I were making a political statement by using nuclear waste in art, I might be making the statement that such is the financial constraints or the censorship of the marketplace for fine art today that, in fact, almost all large public sculpture being created is being used from waste material. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, a lot of the stonework or cast metal sculptures that you'll see, prestigious commissions all, are using really a low level of technology and, in fact, often incorporating scrap material. And although this can be explained in a variety of ways, I think a constraint of the financial considerations of the marketplace are part of it. So I would first admit to that as being a political consideration. As far as the further field considerations of working with nuclear material, which is a very political topic, certainly in the world today, I'd be more inclined to say that we are in the nuclear age, and the age of stone, the age of bronze, the age of iron are in many ways best remembered by the works of art that the artists who were working in that period left behind. Certainly, when we examine Stone Age artwork and stone carvings from that period, or even utilitarian items that were fashioned at that high level of skill, it speaks volumes about a people who left us no written word. You could almost say that the sculpture that is left behind by these technological achievements say a great deal about the peoples who use that technology. The fact that we are now in the nuclear age and that some of the issues raised by this are of the utmost importance, perhaps even for the survival of all of us here on this planet, or certainly the habitability of this planet in the future, I think the fact that art has of yet really to make a contribution toward the solutions of these problems is something that my work addresses. Again, I'd have to say, though, that I worked myself into that position more through a traditional pursuit of the fine art of sculpture rather than selecting that as a goal and then fashioning my art to fit it.
Rather than as an overt sort of political radicalism. There's a wonderful confluence, if not irony here, Jim Acord, mm-hmm. the durability of the art mm-hmm. and then the frightening power as well as the durability of the materials that you're using.
When I hit upon this, I realized that I'd been supplied by fate with an important missing key in my own art. Huh. I have had a desire and an aspiration to work with a higher technology and understanding of advanced materials than it has been easy for me to justify in my creation mm-hmm. of sculpture.
Rather than these throwaway things that you described.
Exactly. And in fact, when competing for commissions in the way in which public art generally comes to be, when there is already a decided budget, to be able to work with a stainless steel or a high-strength corrosion-resistant alloy greatly reduces the amount that you can do on, say, a $100,000 commission. So when I realized that by working with radioactive materials, I would be required for the safety of the community as well as the showing the respect necessary for working with these materials, would require that I select materials specifically for their high durability, their structural cohesiveness, I realized that I had supplied myself with an important criteria or a rationale or a reason, if you will, mm-hmm. for working with the top quality materials that I'd aspired to work with anyway.
You got into this in a sort of crazy, almost unbelievable, Woody Allen movie fashion here. You were using something called Fiesta Ware. Andy Warhol served dinner on it?
It is, in fact, Fiesta Ware is one of the many ceramic tablewares that were produced in the United States from the early 1930s through the early 1950s.
And it's radioactive.
It is, in fact. uranium, tri-uranium octoxide. Uranium oxide was the coloring agent used in the glaze, and the characteristic burned orange color is the color of this uranium glaze. Now, I'll say for your audience that not all orange ceramic tableware is radioactive, but a good portion of it that was made before 1950s is. In fact, until the advent of the nuclear age, really the only use for uranium, the only commercial use why it was mined, was as a colorant in glazes and certain ceramics and certain glasses. I originally chose the uranium contained in this ceramic tableware, well, because it was easily available and it was affordable, but primarily because it didn't require any sort of licensing from the federal or state government.
And you told me off microphone that you encountered, what, $250,000 of a year licensing fee in the state of Washington?
Yes, it was. In fact, this is probably one of the funnier parts of the story of the creation of these particular sculptures, was that having selected Fiesta Ware and other orange glazed ceramic tableware as my source of uranium for these sculptures, largely because they were not a regulated item, they're specifically exempted under the Nuclear Regulatory Commission laws of this country, then the regulatory bodies became concerned that I was in fact I don't know what they were concerned about.
Crazy artist blows
right.
up Sanford,
it was
Seattle,
fact, it,
whatever.
It was largely a perceptual problem when although I carefully kept them informed of what I was doing and the materials I was working with and had received repeated reassurance that they were not concerned about my use of Fiesta Ware, they suddenly made an about turn and decided that in fact they didn't want me working with Fiesta Ware, and under a very strict and a kind of unusual interpretation of the laws governing radioactive material, they decided that my breaking of these plates was in fact the processing of uranium, and this is covered by a very expensive series of licenses which would amount to almost $300,000 a year in the state of Washington.
Let me ask you to compress the story. How did you overcome the obstacle?
Well, needless to say, I couldn't deal with it financially, although it's commonly known that sculpture is the most capital intensive of the fine arts. The $300,000 license for breaking Fiesta Ware plates was beyond my capabilities. I appealed initially on the grounds that because this was an exempt material, my use of it would be exempt, and in addition, the finished sculptures containing this Fiesta Ware would be exempt. I seesawed back and forth with both Washington State's Department of Radiation Control and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, trying to address the various questions and concerns that they had. And it is hard to compress this story. I had to have radiochemical analysis done of the materials I was working with over at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. And I mean, that sounds like a simple story in itself, but it took me 6 months to ship my 100-gram sample over there because it turned out I wasn't licensed to ship radioactive materials through the mail.
You got to move it.
I had to move it, right. Well, in any event, to compress the story, I was finally granted permission to resume my work and regain ownership of all of the Fiesta Ware plates I had to distribute amongst my friends. I was enjoined to own no more than 15 pounds of Fiesta Ware at any one time. Because of another small fine print line in the rules and regulations governing radioactive material, which said that ceramics whose uranium content was less than 20% by weight were also exempt. And so on that narrow grounds, I have been granted permission from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and this is incidentally recognized then by Washington State. The states tend to go along with the NRC on this. So I have resumed work on these sculptures. Mm-hmm. It has been pointed out to me very clearly by the regulating bodies that this is for working with fiestaware only. And
I
should I get to the point where I want to start putting plutonium in my sculptures, I'll be up for a whole nother round of licensing.
Jim, do you have, as it were, a grand design? I believe I've read that you want to create a series of sculptures around the world, a sort of nuclear belt, as it were.
I would, in fact, a nuclear belt. That's a pretty good term. I may want to use that one without attribution. I do, in fact, like the ideas of series of sculptures, meaning more than one individual work of art that relates to one another one similar to it from a distance. This is seen close up in cathedral art, where numerous sculptures placed in the same building relate to each other. And I believe on a sense of scale can easily be expanded to relate to each other on a global or even an interplanetary level. What we have as far as using radioactive material in a sculpture is we have an awful lot of radioactive waste that we don't really know what to do with. We're going to have to care for it carefully so that it doesn't get into our water supply and into the food chain and contaminate the earth any more than it has. One of the things I think that my sculpture offers to this problem is by placing this radioactive waste inside durable, safe, easily observable sculptures, which will allow us to keep an eye on it and contain it. We can also create a lasting understanding of how we work with this material. We can, in fact, perhaps more thoroughly and more successfully integrate the nuclear age with the state of being humans. I think that by the nuclear waste problems are of an international nature. It's not just the large industrial countries that are producing nuclear waste. Almost all countries now have nuclear reactors of some sort. And the spread of the nuclear waste problem is something that is will draw increasing concerns as more and more unfortunate accidents and leaks occur.
Do you find yourself, Jim, marshaling support? I don't get the sense that you're an activist on your own terms about this, but are you feeling a sense of support from industry, from the government, from the artistic community? This is a wonderful and an odd and unexpected combination that you present.
Well, I'm proud of pointing out that when the public hearings were being held in Washington State on the state of Washington being a finalist for America's high-level nuclear waste repository, I alone was booed by everyone. And I console myself that the sure sign of an idea whose time has come is a little initial resistance. Actually, at first, the conservation groups such as Greenpeace thought it was a bad idea. They saw one more crazy person out there handling radioactive material. They thought my ideas would make working with radioactive materials more acceptable to people and therefore would increase nuclear usage, and that was part of the problem. On the other side of the fence, the government and the private contractors who do the nuclear work for our federal government, they thought it was their worst nightmare come true. Suddenly here was this crazy artist standing up out of the middle of nowhere saying he was already creating these radioactive sculptures and putting it forth as a solution to problems that they thought were completely and solely their responsibility. With the passage of time and many long and hard-headed conversations with people on both sides of the fence, certainly there are some people that still think the artistic use of radioactive materials is a bad idea. However, certain people, both within the nuclear industry, speaking of government as well as the subcontractors, and they're often hard people to tell apart, they're the same people sometimes, and people on the side of conservation, the ecologists, if you will, have warmed to the idea somewhat. Although to some people art will always appear to be a frivolous use of human time and materials, I think to anyone thoughtful enough to realize that the creation of art says something distinctly human about our use of these materials, can see that artistic expressions of our nuclear age is a very logical and straightforward continuation of what art is.
You remind me of a line from a poem by Wallace Stevens, "Death is the mother of beauty." Is that a little far-fetched? Does that connect with what you are doing?
Well, I certainly recognize it as a true statement about art. I think in the case of my own artwork, I'm probably too close to it to know whether Mr. Stevens' poem really covers my feelings on this or what it is, I should say, that I'm doing. I think that the use of materials that have been largely dominated by the weapons of destruction. After all, the nuclear age was born in wartime, and in the first fruits that the nuclear age bore were weapons. Has a clear coloration to everything nuclear as being of the forces of darkness and destruction. I think that for me, that's part of the challenge as an artist, is to create something beautiful in some broad sense of that term, something beautiful out of materials that have been so thoroughly dominated by some of the worst traits of mankind. So in that respect, there is something ugly and something deadly associated with anything that is radioactive. Although, as I'm in the habit of pointing out to my colleagues, there's nothing new about radioactivity. It's been around as long as the universe.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a conversation with James Acord, a sculptor from Seattle, Washington. Soundings is available on cassette. Send $4 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Ask for program number 443. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. When writing, please mention the call letters of this radio station. Next week on Soundings, conversations about social satire through the ages. My guests will include scholars from Cornell University and from the University of Mainz. Soundings concludes now with Timeline, a weekly cultural retrospective. The last week in March marks the anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, which occurred in New York City in 1911. The fire resulted in the deaths of nearly 150 workers and led to reforms in American public safety laws. The Three Mile Island nuclear power plant accident occurred in late March 1979, spurring the examination of regulations governing the generation of nuclear power. And birthdays in late March include those of Wilhelm Conrad Röntgen, the discoverer of X-rays, born in 1845, of Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, born in 1930, of Vincent van Gogh, the Dutch painter, born in 1853, and of Edward Fitzgerald, the translator of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Fitzgerald was born during the last week in March 1809. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
The Atomic Sculptor, this week on Soundings. Listen for sculptor James L. Acord, who discusses art and the containment of nuclear waste. James Acord aims to practice his art and to serve humankind by depositing nuclear waste in sculptures that function as artistic repositories, eventually stretching around the world. James L. Acord, the Atomic Sculptor, this week on Soundings.